404-2009. I am at, this is Isaac Junaby, and I am the interviewee for this Yukon Charlie Ethnographic Overview Project. And I am going to interview John Bourne of Eagle, Alaska. John is a longtime resident and a knowledgeable resource of Eagle, Alaska. Some of the questions I'm about to answer, if John feels that he doesn't have to answer, he does not have to answer these. My question number one to you, John, is where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in north central Wisconsin, and I grew up on the whole place until I went in the service.
Where were your parents born?
My mother was born in Wisconsin and my father was born in Sweden. My father grew up in Sweden and my mother lived all her life in Wisconsin.
Where were your grandparents born?
My mother's parents, my grandparents on my mother's side were born in Sweden, and my grandparents on my father's side were born and lived all their life in Sweden.
Where were your great-grandparents born?
They all were born and raised and grew up in Sweden.
What can you tell me about the origins of your family?
Well, not a whole lot, but they left us with a few stories about their early lives. My father left Sweden when he was about 24 years old and immigrated to Canada and then to Chicago, where he was living at the time when my mother met him. And my father's parents never left Sweden, so I didn't know any of them, but he had a brother and a sister that moved to North America. One lived in Canada and one lived in Chicago.
Are there any old beliefs, customs, or traditions practiced by you or your family that remain important? And if so, might you be willing to describe some?
Actually, there aren't any old customs that I'm aware of or traditions that we practice. As a kid, other than the national holidays that we observed, there weren't any traditions that were brought over from Sweden that we followed. So I guess that doesn't apply.
What crafts or other specialized activity do you do?
Well, I'm not a very crafty individual, but here in Eagle, I participate in community activities and especially the dog races that come through here as helping them out. But otherwise, living here is what I enjoy, and that's about it.
I might interrupt by saying that John is involved with a lot of activity within the Yukon Charlie, and John is involved with a lot of snow machines, and he's actually one of the ones that clear the trail for the Yukon Quest Mushers during the spring, early February when we have it. And although John is originally from Wisconsin, I believe that John knows all the traditional activities that goes on in the place, hunting, trapping, and fishing. Are there any old beliefs, customs? What crafts, how would you describe your identity, such as your beliefs, your ancestors, your culture, and your connection to the land or community, your language, or the combination of these?
Well, that's a good question, Isaac. My identity, other than my wife and young daughter came to Eagle from Anchorage back in 1968 to operate the meals and lodging facility. And I've been involved with community activities here in Eagle. Served on the city council, continued to serve on the historical society board and the library board and the local church. And been involved and had the opportunity to meet many of the people who have come through here over the years. People coming through here, it's been my pleasure to meet and get acquainted with a lot of the folks who have been involved in Eagle in the last 40 years. My connection, I've spent a lot of time on the river by snowmobile and enjoy the great outdoors, the beauty of the country. My language is only English. I was spared learning the Swedish language because my parents were going to be Americans and speak English, and they didn't speak enough Swedish so that I could learn any while growing up. So I missed out on that. So that's about it for that question.
Might be interesting to know that I was here when John and his family first moved to Eagle. I remember the place where they stayed, and I think I was the one that told John he wasn't going to make it that first winter in that trading post that he had. Next question would be, a lot of these questions that I asked, I just reflected onto the question before. So number 9, I think he has identified and defined yourself and your family. You have done that already, where you're from and where you're from when you first came. What do you know about Eagle's distant past?
Well, I could spend a lot of time defining that because I've done a lot of reading on the Eagle history, and Eagle has played a big part in the interior of Alaska, being located on the Yukon River, which until a road came in here in the 50s was the main highway through Alaska. And so Eagle played an important part in the development of the interior because it was a port of entry for the U.S. Customs, of people coming and going back and forth to Canada, especially during the gold rush at the turn of the century. And throughout the years, Eagle has been prominent in activities in the interior of Alaska just because of its location.
How have mining activities in the area affected life in Eagle?
Well, not so much right now, but in the past, there was a lot of mining activity going on in the various drainages, the 40 mile, the 70 mile, and the creeks running into them and on down the river into the Charlie, what's in the Charlie River, Charlie National Preserve right now. But it wasn't a very rich area. It produced a lot of gold, but nothing like Dawson or Fairbanks or Iditarod or Nome or some of the other more prominent gold mining areas. But it certainly played a role in the life of Eagle over the years.
Are there any old stories about floods that you know about?
The earliest flood that I know about here that we have a record of was in 1937, when there was an ice jam just below town here that affected the town of Eagle and the village of Eagle as well, and forced people to move out of their cabins and get onto the high ground. But it didn't create a lot of structural damage, mostly just wet their houses down without destroying them.
What role has the church played in the development of Eagle?
Well, over the years, it's been well recorded what the church role was. Prior to the turn of the century, the Episcopal Church was established here and operated for about 5 years, and then it was turned over to the Episcopal Church, which maintained lay readers and people here to hold services, minister to the community and to the village up until into the early 60s. And then as the population diminished, their role was less, and so they would hold services in the summertime or come in for special occasions. In the last 40 years, there's been a local congregation here, and they've been well attended, and people who've been involved in the church have also been involved in the role of maintaining the services that that we have here in Eagle, the city council, the historical society, the library, and other activities that go on here.
What role has the school played in the development of Eagle?
The school was formed here in Eagle way back when Eagle started, and we have a good record of all the school teachers and the places where the students went to school, sometimes in the village and sometimes here in town, depending on where the number of school children were. We have a beautiful school here in Eagle right now that was built after the oil money was made available to upgrade the school. And the school here is a very centrally located facility and gets used quite a bit throughout the school year for activities in the evenings and community activities like the annual Christmas Bazaar in December and other holidays when the school puts on dinners. And the school is a very important part of Eagle's life.
How do you feel that life in Eagle has changed with the coming of new residents?
Well, life in Eagle Town itself has changed considerably. When we came here, there was no central power. There was no telephone. And the mail plane brought in people and freight and whatever twice a week. And as Eagle began to grow in the late 60s, and especially into the 70s when the oil pipeline was being constructed, there were people who came in here and established their families, started families here in Eagle because it was an economical place to live. And Eagle has changed drastically from that respect. There's more new buildings here now in Eagle that have been constructed in the last probably 30 years. Then there were buildings here at the time we came in 1968.
How do you think that tourism has affected the community of Eagle?
Tourism has been a part of our life here in the summer with the museums that we have. We have about six buildings that are fully equipped with displays and items relative to early Eagle. And tourism with Holland America in the last 20 years coming in here with their tour boat, and the impact has not affected the town because they don't stay here overnight, but the impact is minimal. But I think the tourists that we get to see are having a great time on the Yukon River and visiting. This is one of the few places where the tourists have an opportunity to actually talk to people who live here on a year-round basis. So many of the other communities where they stop and spend time, the clerks and the waiters and the waitresses are from somewhere else other than where they're working. And here where they can talk to the people who've lived here and grown up here is quite different, and they find it interesting to be able to talk to people and ask questions that can be answered by people who have been here and are knowledgeable about life in Eagle.
What draws new residents to Eagle, and what causes residents to decide to leave?
Oh, that's a good question, Isaac. New residents come because it's a beautiful spot. They have friends who live here and come in to see them, and some of them stay and participate and get involved in the community. And what causes residents to leave? Quite a variety of reasons. Some, after several years, decide that they don't want to be quite this isolated. Even now, though we have television and radio and daily mail flights and electricity to keep the houses lit so people don't have to live in one room, log cabins or small windows. But other residents will leave when they have opportunities to improve themselves. They've been here, they've done this, and they want to go on and do something else. I take the opinion that people don't leave here as a loser because they've had the experience of living this lifestyle and they've decided to go on and try something else.
What is your opinion of the leadership of Eagle, and what might you have? What ideas might you have?
Having served on the Eagle City Council for a number of years, the leadership of Eagle continues to change. Right now, there's a new council that's been elected, and we'll see what direction that they take the community. Sometimes the new ideas work and sometimes they don't, but at least we have an opportunity they have the opportunity to express themselves and submit to the community some ideas to make it better or change. But leadership is always interesting because you never know what they're going to come up with.
What other historical events do you feel are important in Eagle's past?
I think it's important to maintain the best record we can of the history of Eagle, because our history only goes back about 150 years from 1873. Let's see, that wouldn't be 150 years yet, but Schwatka came through on a survey trip for the government to see what was happening along the Yukon River, and his book tells about coming through here. And then with the gold rush and all the activities that went on here and how Eagle played its role in the Klondike gold rush, it's important to Eagle's past because we have a lot of the buildings and the things that were useful during the time of the gold rush and even later on display in our museums. And I think that adds a lot to what Eagle is today.
I think it's important to note here too, John is one of the ones that every Memorial Day, some of the people here in both communities sort of get together and we do a little reveille and a little prayer up there at the city cemetery, and that itself is one of the things I look forward to. And interesting to note also that John is a veteran and he takes part in a lot of veterans activity if we do have them. Our part two questions has to do with subsistence and employment in Eagle. What kind of work have you done in the past while living in Eagle?
Well, the first 5 years we were here, we operated the Roadhouse, which is a meals and lodging facility. We were only open during the summer because there were not enough people to sustain us in employment during the winter months. And then I became the postmaster, which a job I held for 28 years. And other activities, positions with the Historical Society and the library and other activities going on. And 4th of July is our big national holiday here, because we can usually count on this weather to be good, and people who have lived here in the past come here for an opportunity to reconnect with the place they grew up, or friends and family that they have still living here. So we look forward to the 4th of July because it's like a big homecoming.
How would you describe employment opportunities in Eagle?
Very limited employment opportunities. The National Park Service employs several people during the summer months, and they bring in students and so on for various projects and studies during the summer. Otherwise, the local employment here is basically the school and the local store, and it's pretty limited to make a living here. There's some trapping, and the power company employs a few people, but people don't come here because of the attraction of employment.
What does subsistence mean to you, and how do you participate in subsistence activity in the Eagle area?
Subsistence is very important. Because of the economy here, subsistence, the fishing, the hunting, and the berries play a big part in a lot of our residents' lives, their diet. And I don't participate as much as I used to, not as young as I used to, so I don't get out and hunt as often as I did in the past. But it is a very important part of life, and it should be protected and sustained, because this helps make Eagle what it is being able to utilize the resources that are here for us to live with.
When do you hunt? And this question relates to the time of the year, and just like in the spring class, fall time and summer time, and I think summer time a lot of picking berries and stuff like that.
Yes, so most of the hunting, of course, goes on in the fall, and the fish, you got to fish when the fish are here in July and August. I have never been a trapper because I had a job to support my family with, and I didn't have to go out and compete with people who were trapping for a living. And let's see, what else? But we encourage and occasionally help folks who are hunting. They pack meat and collect their fish out of the nets and so on.
And berry picking?
And berry picking. Yeah. Yep, berry picking as well. We like the wild berries.
How have state and federal regulations help or hinder your subsistence activity?
Well, anytime you have regulations, you've got to abide by them, and sometimes one size doesn't fit every situation. But for the most part, the regulations, I believe, are there to help sustain the animals so that there are animals available, with the quota on caribou to help maintain the herd size. And the hindering of my subsistence activities would be not caused by regulations, but by the fact that the caribou don't always come within our area. If they're 180 miles away and it's in December, I'm not interested in going that far for a caribou. But I would still hunt if the animals were closer by. And with the quota system, it makes it difficult for people to fit into the schedule, because when they reach the quota, the season ends, and that may not be when I am available to go hunting.
How have state and federal regulations affected community subsistence activities?
Well, It appears as though there are fewer fish coming up for subsistence use, and it's quite a challenge for the regulators to know just what amount of fish are coming and how to open the seasons for subsistence users. It's quite a challenge, and perhaps it will improve.
What ideas do you have for Eagle's economic stability?
I don't think there are any.
Do men and women do the same kinds of work in Eagle, or do they tend to do different kinds of labor? What about in the past?
Well, a lot of the couples, men and women who come here in the past, have had to work to get their cabins closed in, and even in the wood cutting and fishing and hunting, there's been a lot of men and women participating in those activities to make it work. And it probably will continue to be that way, because the people who come here, for the most part, are people who are willing to get out and do things, such as hunt and fish and pick berries.
Part 3, experience of flooding and climate change. Were you here in 1975? Can you tell me about the land and weather was like?
Yes, I was here in 1975, and as far as the land and the weather, what I remember about 1975 and the changes that have taken place here is we didn't have telephones and we didn't have community electricity, and it was more primitive of a lifestyle than what people like we experienced today. There was some very cold winters in the middle 70s. I have recorded the weather and river readings for over 40 years now, and I have records of a temperature of 72 below zero. And during that period of time, we had temperatures when it warmed up to minus 60 below zero during the day, and then it would get colder at night for several days in a row, or a couple of weeks. And so that was an experience that I will always remember. So the weather, temporarily at least, has changed. I'm not looking forward to the fact that maybe we'll see 72 below zero again, because I think it would be very dangerous, because most people here are not in a position to deal with those kind of temperatures for any length of time. But there are some changes in the weather, but whether it's just the cycle or whether it's seasonal or climate change, I'm not in a position to say, other than my own personal opinions. You've got to wait longer a period of time than 40 years to determine that there is a change, at least in here, in Eagle.
I would like to follow up with a question on something that I heard you and I talk about one time, John. It was a few years ago. It was there was a difference in about almost 100 degrees during the winter time, where on a Friday it was
very short period of time.
I'd like to ask you on that one.
Oh yes, very short period of time when the weather changed close to 100 degrees in about 3 days. And that's pretty exciting, because when it starts warming up, everybody gets excited, because it's probably been cold long enough that you're tired of it. And to see that drastic a change in 3 to 4 days is pretty special. There's a lot of places that don't see that much of a turnaround in the weather.
Were you here during the flood of 2009? And what happened then?
Well, that could take hours to explain all that. Yes, I was here for the flood of 2009. In a nutshell, what happened, we had more than average thickness of ice, and the warm weather, or the weather stayed cool throughout April. The last couple of days of April and the first couple of days of May, we had mid-70s, and the snow melted rapidly and filled the side streams and flooded into the Yukon, raising the ice before it deteriorated so that it would crumble, as it usually does during breakup. The high water jammed, the high water moved some ice, it caused great jams, and the water backed up and we were flooded. We happened to be in the right place so we could have a flood. And then when the water and the ice came from above and started pushing on the ice that was blocked in here at Eagle, it raised the water level to record heights and pushed ice into the community and totally wiped out the Eagle Village and created a tremendous amount of damage along the river banks, up and down the river, and here at Eagle, and crushed probably 25 or 30 significant buildings. So, yes, I was here.
What do the elders that you know that you talk to say about erosion, flooding, and storms?
Well, not a whole lot about erosion. We see some erosion along the river in front of town here, and then they put in the retaining wall after the flood and high water of 92. But there's no evidence that the water has ever been as high as it got in the spring of 2009. Storms. We don't generally have a lot of storms here. We have snow, and later on we'll have wind, but very seldom do we ever see a blizzard.
How has the community reacted to floods in the past? Evacuation, moving houses, protecting kids and elders?
Well, in the past, when the water would flood over the bank, especially in the village 3 miles above us here, people were aware of what was happening and they moved to high ground. Very little structural damage has ever occurred from any previous floods, mostly water damage. And as far as protecting kids and elders, they were aware of what was happening and it wasn't a problem to get them to higher ground. This year, here in Eagle, 7 people had to be rescued from their dwellings by canoe because they could not drive out, and it was tough to get a boat in there because there were too many trees that had been knocked over and blocking access to their places to get them out. They had to use a canoe at 2:00 in the morning.
Do you notice changes in temperature? Snowfall, rain, rivers, lakes, or ponds in the local area?
Change in temperatures? Yes and no. I've been keeping weather records for 40 years. And we have them on file in the computer. And my wife has put them on a program where we can see the average temperature month to month for 40 years. And we just looked at some of this last week. And on the long-term temperature changes, on the average temperatures month by month, there isn't a lot of change. A lot of significant change in this period. There are some years when a particular month will be extremely cold, but when you average that into a 10 or 20 or 30 year average, it doesn't affect it very much. Snowfall, this area generally doesn't get a lot of snow, because a lot of depth of snow, because the snow falls in very cold weather and it's dry. The rain, our average total precipitation annually runs between 10 and 13 inches of total moisture, and that hasn't changed much on the overall average in 40 years. Changes in the river levels, that varies considerably depending on where the heavy rain falls upstream. And again, even 40 years of temperature and snowfall and rainfall records that I have kept, I don't see a significant change that would lead me to believe that 40 years is enough to make a determination that yes, there are some serious changes taking place, especially in this area. There are probably other areas in Alaska that are being impacted more severely than we are. But here, I don't see a lot of change. Perhaps the temperatures are a little warmer, but not significant.
Please describe what the river and the region means to you in practical and personal terms.
Well, that's a good question, Isaac. Living on the river is always an interesting component to life here. A lot of folks have their boats and spend a lot of time on the river. I don't have a boat, but I have a snowmobile. And the river provides me with access to parts of this area that I would never see if I didn't get to travel by snowmobile. So it's only practical to me in the wintertime. And I guess I base that on the fact that if my snowmobile quits, I can walk. If my boat quits, I can't walk very far. So I'm not much into boats.
Part 4, Yukon Charley Rivers National Preserve. What is your overall opinion of the Yukon Charley Rivers National Preserve?
The Yukon Charley folks have been mandated to accomplish certain tasks, and over the years that they've been here, I see that they're doing a lot of survey work on the flora and the fauna, and undoubtedly they are accumulating a lot of useful information. Problem is, the general public doesn't get to see what the outcome is, unless you go to a lot of trouble to inquire about reports that have been written up about the different studies that have gone on. I've enjoyed the people that have been sent here to do this job. They've done their job well, but it's somewhat of a mystery as to what how it all fits into the bigger scope of things, and that probably isn't going to change.
What has been the most positive thing about the preserve since its establishment?
The positive aspect, in as much as the Yukon Charley Preserve has the privilege of studying an entire river drainage of the Charley River, and it's quite diverse, mountains and streams and the birds and the fish and the animals, and I think they at least know a lot more about the country than ever has been in the past, and hopefully it will benefit the state to know. Perhaps it's their input helps make decisions about other things that go on, like hunting seasons and harvest and so on. I'd like to give them the benefit that they're doing a good job, because it's spending a lot of money doing it.
What has been the most negative thing about the preserve since its establishment?
I think, in my opinion, the only negative thing that I have is the problem is the lack of communicating to the public in a meaningful way as to what they are accomplishing.
What do you know of people who have lived in the preserve since its establishment, and what was their opinion of the preserve, if you know and are willing to share this?
Oh my, that's a good question, Isaac. Prior to the preserve, there were a number of people who came in here, young couples, and established themselves at the mouth of a number of creeks, and were living off of the land to the best of their ability, proving to themselves that they had what it took to make it work, and to make it work was a full-time job between building, mucking out a garden, putting up fish, harvesting moose, trapping for furs for clothing. And when the land claim settlement was implemented, there were some very heavy-handed tactics used to let these people know that they could no longer trespass on federal land and were asked to leave. A little more compassion for these people, to give them some time, because most of the people probably would have left anyway, because after a while they realized that they had accomplished everything that they could, and if they were going to do anything else with their life after successfully subsisting, they would need to do that while they were still capable. And others, children came along and needed to go to school, and several of them moved into town or into Fairbanks for schooling activities that the kids needed. And being a little more patient with the people who lived there, even though they were in trespass, could have been dealt with in a much more humane manner.
Do you make use of the preserve for hunting, fishing, trapping, or any other activity?
No, I don't. In as much as the preserve territory doesn't even start until you're 12 miles downriver, and not being a trapper and not actively being a subsistence in fishing myself, I'm not a user of the preserve.
What advice would you have concerning the preserve and its management?
I think I've covered my opinions in the previous question.
Can you describe any of the trails in the area, or what do you know about their use in the past and present?
Well, the most significant trail we have around here is the one that traverses from Eagle to the 70 Mile River cross country. It's been a trail that's been in use probably forever. And it even presently is getting a lot of use, and hopefully that will continue for trapping, for people getting to their mining claims, for recreational use, or wood cutting, and people would like to go out and just walk in the woods.
Now we'll go to part 5, the future of Eagle. When you think about the future of Eagle, what do you see?
What do I see for Eagle in the future? Well, with the economy and the national scope being what it is, it's hard to say. In the last 40 years, we've always had people coming into here, and after a period of time, Moving on, I think the population, probably 80% of the population of Eagle has turned over three or four times in the last 40 years, and will probably continue to be some of that because of the economics. Not everybody who wants to live here can make a living here, and they move on eventually or other things to do. So what do I see? I don't see a whole lot of growth under the current economic picture.
Can you think about and then list infrastructures you want in the village?
Well, that's a good question too, Isaac. I think the infrastructure that we have in place at this time is probably the best that we're going to get with the economics like they are.
There has been a lot of talks about sustainability. Can you tell me what that means to you?
I think I covered that in the previous question. It will depend on the national economy and how it affects Alaska, the Alaska economy, and how it affects Eagle. We just have to wait and see. I don't think there's any evidence that we're not going to continue, but at what rate, it's anybody's guess.
Are you interested in alternative energy sources for, it says village here, but I say Eagle area?
Yeah, it would be nice to know that. Let's see, where were we? Interested in alternative energy sources for Eagle. Yes, I would be interested in alternative energy, but I don't know how practical it would be in a place like this unless they're able to develop the generating of power in the current of the Yukon River. I think it's the only possibility that we have to get away from burning oil and gasoline, oil especially for lights. In the summer, probably get some solar relief from solar energy, but in the winter time when the sun is so low on the horizon, I don't think it would be very practical for at least 4 or 5 months out of the year. And wind, our wind is so erratic, we go long stretches of time with no wind at all, and wind generators would be very practical because if you have any wind, you don't have any electricity.
Do you have any ideas about the future of Eagle and where it needs to go?
Where does the future of Eagle need to go? I think probably the biggest selling point we have for Eagle is the beauty of this area on the Yukon River, the mountains around us, and the historic accumulation in the museums to preserve what Eagle was in the past. We have some very unique displays of historical items, and they're well explained and well organized. And I think the history is probably one of the things that we should try to pursue to make it attractive for people to come and see for themselves the beauty of this part of the world where we live and the history that made it all possible.
I would just like to add right now that this is the end of the interview with John, and that I would just like to add that a copy of this tape that I made of John answering my questions about the overview of the ethnographic Yukon Charlie project will be given to him after I make a copy. But since this was my first interview on this project, I would just like to add that it was a lot of fun, and I think that the questions were very reasonable, and that one of the things I look forward to is hearing the answers, and I think that this is how we, everybody learns to do an interview, and that an interview like this means more than a book that is written, and this is, so we both can learn from this, and we will go ahead from there, and thank you, John.
You're welcome.